Well, hello and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I'm your co-host, Brian Brown. And as always, Mike and I are coming to you from downtown Music City, USA, at the headquarters of Lifeway Christian Resources. And Mike, we have the privilege of recording these podcasts.
Yes, we do.
In the B.B. McKinney Studios, historic and majestic as the man himself. And it is a thrill to be here. This week, we have a very interesting topic. Mike, you probably get more phone calls than anybody I know of asking this question. Mike, we're looking for a worship leader. Can you help us? Can you help us find a worship leader? And I think you get this question so often that it motivated you to write a blog on the topic about, as these conversations go on, I think you hear kind of some of the same themes over and over again from churches that are looking for a worship pastor. And a lot of times, I think the things they're looking for that they state to you might be a little off from what they actually need. So today's topic, five myths about finding a worship pastor. You wrote about that at worshiplife.com, and we want to talk about it today. So for churches, Mike, that are out there that have a worship pastor position open, let's give the listeners some of the conversation that you would typically have when a church, maybe it's a search committee, maybe it's the senior pastor, gives you a call and says, Mike, we're looking for
somebody. Well, I need to do a disclaimer first.
Okay.
I just want to tell people this so they'll know their expectations will be appropriate if they ever choose to call me and ask me about recommending someone. I rarely do it. Okay. I very rarely will recommend a specific person to a specific church.
By name.
By name. Right. And the reason I don't is because for me to do that, I would have to know two things extremely well.
Right.
I would have to know that church's ministry extremely well, not just from a distance, but for one reason or another, it would have to be a church that I knew from the inside out. And maybe I've been there a lot. Maybe I used to serve there or served in that community or know the pastor really well. But I would have to know that church explicitly. And then I would have to know the person I'm recommending to them explicitly. I do not haphazardly just connect churches with names of people.
And so that resume I left on your desk, that's going to go
nowhere. It's going to go
nowhere.
Right. And the reason I don't do that is because too much is at stake. I'm not going to send a person unknowingly into a situation that could be destructive. And I'm not going to send a person to a church and put that church in a position of not having the caliber of leader that they really feel like they needed and be responsible for that. So I'm so careful. But just this week, I recommended someone to a church because it was a church I knew really, really, really well. And it was a person I knew really, really, really well. And I knew they would be or felt confident they'd be a great fit. I'm not the Holy Spirit, and I'm certainly not a placement agency. But I tell you what I do enjoy doing. I love talking to pastors about this because I like asking pastors diagnostic type questions and helping them discover what they really need. And that's sort of the spirit of this blog. I was inspired to write it. And by the way, this blog has been kind of the biggest one so far this year. I mean, it's been shared many times, and that's why we knew it was a topic we probably ought to address. But when I talk to pastors about this, my purpose is helping them discover what really is the kind of leader that God would lead to them. I don't know that, but I think the pastor can know that. And so I'm just asking a lot of questions and helping him identify. And that's where these myths come from. I identified five of them because these all come from statements that pastors have made to me. I think we should look for XYZ.
Sure.
And my response would be no, that's not at all the criteria that you should be thinking about. What you need to be thinking about is of this, and this. And that's where the spirit of this. This was also basically the email that put me over the cliff on this blog was one I received from someone saying, our church is like this in this part of the country, and we're looking for a 30-something who can transition us from a choir-led service to a band-led service.
Wow.
And there's about seven things wrong with that statement. And so my email response to him tried to address that, But that really is what inspired me to write this blog.
Absolutely. So five myths about finding a worship pastor, and a compilation, I think I hear you saying, of the most common themes, statements that pastors make, really that are assumptions. Maybe churches, I don't want to put this all on pastors. A lot of times it's a search committee.
Sure.
But assumptions that maybe we all have that really, if you think about it a little bit deeper, turn out to be wrong. So what's the first myth on the list?
Well, the first thing I pointed to was the assumption that young leaders or new leaders need significant experience in a similar situation to ours before we'll know they're qualified to lead us. And here's what I mean by that statement, that experience is often overvalued in this search. Now experience is important. And the role is so significant to the health of a church and to the chemistry of a leadership team that finding someone with experience is a comfort to a leadership, to a search committee or to a pastor. I know this guy can do this because he has done it before in a setting like ours. But I'm afraid sometimes we put so much value on experience alone that we miss more critical characteristics of this leader. And I would submit to you that experience by itself is not the best barometer to measure what your next leader should be like. I tell pastors often that you would do well to find a underling, a mentoree who has been part of a ministry that's like the one you want to build, or you feel like your church really should have. You would do well to find someone who grew up in that or who served in that in an associate role or some kind of tangent responsibility to a ministry like that, but has skill, training, has humility, has character, integrity, spiritual development, has all of those characteristics, but they may have never led by themselves in a role like you have. Don't let experience eliminate that candidate. As a matter of fact, churches should get excited about the opportunity to form and shape your leader by bringing them in. If they have all of the other qualifications, you can actually become an integral part of their development, and you can grow them up to be the leader that you really wanted them to be. So I guess myth number one is that we've got to find somebody that's done this before in a church like ours. And I'd say not necessarily. You might find someone who is able to do what you need done there, but really hasn't had the experience yet. But your church could be strategic in developing this leader into the leader that you need.
Absolutely. I think about some very well-known worship leaders, and what a privilege it would be to say they started at our church.
Well, yeah. And here's something that I run into, and maybe, you know, Brian, it could be the reason I'm sensitive to this area, is I'm around college students all the time and seminary students. It's one of my favorite things to do. Just recently, I was at Charleston Southern University and learning more about their church music program there and Matt McCall leading that. And I see in the eyes of these young people, I see the desire, the calling, I see the skill, I see, but they don't have experience. Where are they going to get that? And I think churches should be more willing. And I would say this of all staff positions, even young pastors, churches should be more willing to give younger, called, equipped, trained people opportunity, and then put some godly people around them to help nurture and shape their leadership skill. But pour into the next generation. Don't withdraw from them just because they happen not to have 15 years experience.
Amen. So let's talk about myth number two in the five myths of finding a worship.
Well, this is a two-part myth. I'll give you the first part. Older leaders, it's a myth to believe that older leaders cannot connect with younger congregations. Mm. That's just not true. Some of the great worship leaders I know are older, but they are not out of date in the sense that they are completely current on what's happening in churches. They are musically equipped, et cetera, et cetera. And this is almost the antidote of myth number one.
Right.
But the idea that our church is young, we must have a young leader, that's not necessarily true. That there are people, I've got somebody in my mind right now, and I'm not going to call his name, but I know somebody right now that's 60 years old that is as current and as capable as any 25-year-old or 30-year-old I've seen. He could lead any ministry anywhere in any style and has the humility and the calling and the skill, and he's 60. And you go, man, he's too old for our church. I think that's a tragic mistake because of where life stage is now. This most guys that are 60 years old are going to do it for 15 more years,
right.
And maybe at least 10 more years. And to find a 60-year-old guy that has all of the skill, all of the preparation, and all of the ability and the perspective. To think our church is young, we need a young leader, is a myth. I mean, you may actually, as a matter of fact, if you have a real young church, you might need an older leader just to give some perspective and some maturity and some spiritual leadership in this role. But the second part of this myth is our church is older, and so we shouldn't have a younger leader. And that's not true either. Here's what I say in the summary on this particular myth is that the chronological age of the leader should really be a non-factor in this decision because the right person connects, not the right aged person. You could, let's say you have a young church. We're 30 year olds. We got to have a 30 year old worship pastor. But if he doesn't have a shepherding skill, if he doesn't have musical versatility, if he doesn't have leadership qualities, on and on and on you could go. He could be the right age. He could absolutely rip your church apart, and he's the same age as everybody else. Same thing is true in the reverse scenario, where it's an older church, and so we must have a more mature. No. As a matter of fact, some of the most beautiful relationships I've seen churches have with their music leader is when a church of an older congregation, maybe median age or older, or certainly a large segment of the church in that category, that almost adopts this 30-year-old that comes in and starts leading them. Yeah. And the relationship there, it's unbelievable. I got a message last week, a phone message from a sweet lady that was in my first church. And I thought she was old then, but that was 35 years ago. I don't even know how old she is now.
Well, old gets younger every day.
Well, exactly. But she probably was, I don't know. She's got to be in her 80s now, but she was a grandmother type figure to me in my very first church when I was 20 years old. She'd take me home for lunch on Sunday. I was single. You know, this was before I married Teresa. But even after Teresa and I married young, we were at her house. She was like a grandmother to me. And all these years later, she's calling me this week, wanting to know how I'm doing. The relationships are that significant. So I would challenge any older congregation not to shy away from the young. And I would challenge any younger group not to think that the leader couldn't be older than they are. The right person connects. It's not the right aged person. It's the right person. And don't let age be a determining factor in the leader that you're going to call.
Right. Well, we're talking with Mike Harland here on the Worship Life podcast about five myths about finding a worship pastor. We've covered, you know, not assuming that the person has to have that leadership experience, that your church could be the place to give them that if they have the right background and training. And then we've talked about not letting age be an issue, whether to young or old or anywhere in between. Age shouldn't be a determining factor. Mike, what's myth number three about finding a worship pastor?
Well, I've got a bias about this one, and I just need to put that out there. I really believe, it's my conviction, that the most powerful corporate worship experiences are very often choir led. And you go, well, we don't really do choir in our church. And I want to say, why not? And because what you're thinking of as choir is probably a very limited view of what choir can be.
Yeah, I've heard guys say, I'm a contemporary guy, so I don't want to talk about choir.
But I want to say to that guy that the most powerful contemporary services that I've seen are ones that have 30 or 40 people that are on risers or in a choir loft that are prompting the congregation. And I don't know any ministry person that wouldn't rather have 50 people do something instead of five people do something.
Sure.
And so if you want to reduce your ministry down to just the handful of superstar singers, you can do that. But you want to get a congregation rolling, put a choir that's worshiping and engaged and prompting the response, and a congregation will find their voice inside a choir much faster in a worship service than they ever will with a praise team that's more artistically driven. So in a lot of settings, you can have both. But here's myth number three, that knowing how to lead a choir is no longer important in finding a worship pastor. And I want to say that's a myth. You need to look for people that know what to do with a choir in worship. And if you have a leader that understands how to use a choir and worship, and this isn't about style,
right,
traditional or contemporary or anything in between. It's about leadership. So you've got to find a person that has more than just music skill, but they have people skill and leadership skill, so they can lead an organization of people, and not just a handful of people, but like a bigger organization of a choir or even an orchestra. And all the ways, the myth I'm calling out is that it's not important whether or not this person leads choir. And I would say you're settling for second best. You really are. As a matter of fact, my response to the email I told you about that kind of prompted this blog,
They
said, we're looking for a 30-something that can transition from choir to band. Mm. I wrote them back and said, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
Because you're actually settling for second best if you do anything other than choir-led worship. And again, I said that I'm biased toward the choir, but I know I've seen it with and without, and I'm telling you, the right leader that knows how to use a choir, no matter what the music style is, can create this atmosphere where the response is dynamic. So I would say to that worship pastor search team, find somebody that knows what to do with a choir and knows how to lead people, than just singing songs themselves. They're great performers. Find somebody that knows how to lead people and can put a choir on that stage.
No doubt. Mike, I've heard Dr. Rayner and some others involved in research say that, you know, years ago, a regular church attender attended church three times a week. Today, we define regular church attendance as three times a month.
Yeah.
And I think that when you were talking about having 20, 30, 40 people in a choir, I think about that as 20, 30, 40 individuals or dozens of families that have a reason to be at church this Sunday, a reason to be discipled, and a choir is a wonderful disciple-making body. As you say all the time, and it's absolutely critical that you find a way to incorporate that type of ministry regardless of style. I guess, I think that's a great one.
I guess what I'm trying to refute is this idea that, well, as long as we can find somebody that can sing and lead songs, we'll be fine. And I'm saying don't settle for that.
Right.
I mean, you are settling for second best if you find somebody that doesn't know how to lead a group of people like a choir.
Amen. What's myth number four?
Well, I see that I had something under my craw, apparently, when I'm reading back through this blog, because myth four is also age related. And I'm not trying to make this whole thing about age. But
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. but myth four is that you have to be young in order to lead modern songs. And that is just not true. I'm thinking of somebody right now that if I called his name, people all over that listen to our podcast know this person immediately. They are widely respected as a worship leader. There's not a church in America that wouldn't want this guy to come be their worship leader. But I happen to know that this year on his birthday, he's going to turn 46 years old.
Right.
So there are churches out there, including the one that emailed me recently asking for a worship leader, that just age alone, they would say, well, this guy's too old.
Wow.
And yet he would be the best one they could get in America if I called the name. If I called that church and said, would you want so-and-so? They would immediately say, yeah, we'd love to have him come. Well, did you know he was 46?
Wow.
Well, because age is such a relative thing. I mean, the chronology of someone's age has nothing to do with their calling, their gifting, their skill, nothing. And I would say, don't assume that someone that's over 40 can't lead modern songs, because it's just not true. And don't assume that somebody that's 22 can't lead older songs. And I make the point in the blog on this. I say there are older songs that shouldn't be sung, for sure. And there's some new songs that shouldn't be sung. And the age of the person leading either one is a non-factor. So I guess the myth, again, it's all about age, but the myth is this, that it takes a young person to lead contemporary music, and that is just not true.
As strikes me, Mike, as you were talking, if that 45 age barrier is a problem for leading contemporary songs, Chris Tomlin's in trouble. He'll be hitting that number.
Exactly.
This year.
So, perfect example.
He'll be hitting that number. Example. Sorry to call you out there, Chris, but happy birthday this May. All right, we're talking with Mike Harland about five myths about finding a worship pastor based on a question that Mike, as the director of Lifeway Worship Resources, gets all the time, how helping churches and find the right worship leader. And so, Mike, we've talked about that. This this person, maybe they haven't led before, but they're the right person to lead in your church, and your church can be the one to give them that opportunity. We've talked about not letting age be a factor. We've talked about not assuming that one area of giftedness, maybe a great voice, maybe he's a great instrumentalist, is enough. He needs to have a more broad skill set, leading a choir, doing some other things. And we have talked about not assuming that your worship style determines the age of your worship leader. So what's myth number five, the last one on this list, even finding a worship leader that churches
might sound
should know?
It might sound a little redundant, but there's a nuance to number five that I want to bring out. But number five myth was, hey, and I've actually had pastors say this, we just need someone that can sing and lead songs. And I'd say that's a myth. And then this myth, I'm not calling out the broader music skill set. I'm talking about the broader spiritual responsibility of this role. Mm-hmm. And because it doesn't matter what church you are, you could say, you know what, this role, we don't really need a pastor in this role. We don't really need a spiritual leader in this role. Just a great musician that can just kind of come in and do what they do. And then we won't even expect them to be part of anything else. All they got to do, and we're going to pay them really well, and we're going to get the best there is, and we're going to have a great performer. Here's the problem with that. Worship leadership is first and foremost spiritual leadership. It is not just musical leadership. If musical leadership alone would be enough in a church setting, then you could just put on a CD during the music part of your service. Uh-huh. I mean, there's a context of ministry wrapped up in the person that is the leader. And if they don't have spiritual credibility with the flock, their ability to lead the flock spiritually is going to be significantly impaired. If they're not connected spiritually, well, so you can say all day long, hey, this guy doesn't have to visit hospitals. This guy doesn't have to be available for ministry consultation. He doesn't have to shepherd anyone. All we need him to do is sing. And I want to tell you, over time, that's going to get really, really shallow in how he can lead the church spiritually. A shepherd cannot lead a flock that he does not know. And the hired gun music approach really limits what how effective this leader can be. Now, I want to give a disclaimer here. There are churches that have people that lead the music in this way, but in those settings, the spiritual leadership of the church are very, very involved in the music leadership. And a particular church comes to mind that's an example of this, where the pastor actually involves himself as the spiritual leader of the worship experience. He is actually in the service, in the music portion of the service. He's not leading the songs vocally necessarily, but he's setting them up. He's giving them context. He's planning the worship. He's very heavily involved. And in so obviously and transparently so, that he is it's actually understood in the church that the pastor is the one leading this. In that scenario, yeah, he can have a singer come up and do the song because that guy's not planning, he's just singing the song. It's kind of like a minister of music who has a soloist that he uses, but his spiritual credibility is the leadership. So in a setting where the pastor, or maybe it's an elder-led church and there's an elder that's over the worship services and they give the conspicuous spiritual leadership to the event, yeah, hire a singer if you, in that setting, but the congregation knows full well the singer is only singing; he's not leading spiritually. But I would say that example is very, very rare.
Right,
there are places where that happens, and I know one or two, but that's not the typical setting. Typically, the pastor is focused on preaching. He's focused on pastoring. He's often the strategic leader of the church in terms of strategy. He's giving direction to the discipleship process. He doesn't have the energy and in many cases doesn't feel like he's equipped to give the spiritual leadership to the music ministry, worship ministry. He needs a leader that can give spiritual context to the music ministry. So the fifth myth is we just need someone that can sing lead songs. Well, okay, on the surface that may seem reasonable, but he's going to be very limited in how well he can lead a congregation if he's not equipped and ready to be a spiritual leader. And I would say to anybody listening to this who wants to be one of those people that's singing and leading songs, if you want to do that in a church, you better make sure you have some pastoral calling and some pastoral skills, because you're going to be needed to step into a leadership role that is spiritual in nature, not just musical in nature.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, it's an important topic. And so hopefully to our listeners out there who might be looking for a new leader for their worship and music ministry in their church, or if they know of a church that is, we can point them to worshiplife.com, where you can find the podcast, I mean, the blog, rather, Five Myths About Finding a Worship Pastor.
I got an idea for churches. If your church, whoever you're listening to, if your church is looking for a worship pastor right now, why don't you share this podcast with your search team?
Right.
And if you disagree with it, you can get a really good conversation going on your search team about some of these things we've talked about today. And I would even welcome our listeners, if they've got one or two more thoughts on this subject, we'd love to hear from them, and would be happy to pass those along.
Absolutely. Worship@lifeway.com. And Mike, you bring up a great point. We always talk about asking our listeners to send in suggestions, but we are open to the idea that your experience might be different from our own. And we learn it's a two-way street. So email us, worship@lifeway.com, things that you hear in our podcast that you may want to push back against, or a perspective maybe that's underrepresented, or you feel like something that we have said might misrepresent something. We'd love to hear from you. Anything that you have to say, we exist to serve you as churches and your mission of making disciples, as we say here at Lifeway Resources, and we try to live that out every day. Also in that same vein, let us know how we can pray for your church specifically. Every week, the members of Lifeway Worship Resources, we get together and we pray for churches in addition to our business and each other, and so we'd love to know how to do that specifically. So share your prayer requests, worship@lifeway.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until next week, for Mike Harland, I am Brian Brown, saying thanks for joining us on the Worship Life Podcast. We'll talk to you again soon.